So welcome everyone. This is the ins and outs of opening and creating your own bed and breakfast, guest house, Airbnb, VRBO, any short-term rental. So that's the conversation in this particular series. And tonight we are talking with John and Sarah Steyer. And so we're going to talk all about how they got started. I do not have a bio on you guys. So give me some background. What all happened to get you up to the point where you decided you wanted to have a short-term rental? Tell us about that.
Well, we met, we were both members of the circus. No, I'm kidding. Kind of, actually. Sarah and I met, we actually worked in a restaurant together.
Okay.
And I had graduated college in 2009 and there was no jobs at the time. It was smack dab in the recession. And so I went back to work at a restaurant I had worked at in high school. And I loved working there. And I ended up staying there for 10 years, during which I met Sarah, mm-hmm. who...
I was doing an apprenticeship at the time because I was in culinary school after I got my bachelor's degree. And I just happened to do my apprenticeship at the same place where John worked. And so we worked in the kitchen together for a few years. Mm-hmm.
So working in a kitchen is very difficult. Anyone that has done that knows that. And I got to a point where I had done everything I could managing a restaurant. And it was either... this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, or I got to get out. So I flirted around with different career paths, and I ended up in real estate, which was one of the best decisions I've ever made. And it was much to Sarah's chagrin, because her whole family is in real estate, and she's the one that's not. And, you know, so that was always something she's like, not wanting to do.
Yeah, I got out and then he pulled me back in.
I get it.
But now she's happy about it, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a good career move. And I still, now I work at Nationwide Children's. I'm a data analyst. And so John is really the real estate guru. I'm still out of the buying and selling and the long-term rentals. But I do think the short-term rental arm is pretty fun. And I really enjoyed setting up the Airbnb we have in the basement. So I will join this part, but that's it. That's where I draw the line.
Okay. or so she says.
Yeah.
She's just getting started. She doesn't even know how much fun it's going to be.
I get it.
We originally said, oh man, I wish when we were younger and we were used to roommates and stuff, we would have house hacked and just like lived in a double and rented out the other side. And we thought, well, that ship has sailed. We're too old for that now. But now that's basically what we're doing here, just in a short-term version.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I do the same thing, by the way. I have a short-term rental in Canal Winchester, Ohio, and we actually live here. This is our home. And we bought it. You know, my story is very similar. In 2009, March of 2009, right in the middle of everything, we bought this
right
house. But I was still working full-time. And so it wasn't until I retired in 2017 that we decided to open some of the rooms up as a short-term rental. So I actually rent instead of a whole suite, I actually rent by the room.
How does that treat you? I mean, you got people coming in and out of your area.
We have a separate owner suite kind of in the back. And so the guests have their separate entrance. So they come and go.
Okay.
Sometimes guests will check in really, really late. They check out really, really early the next morning if they have to catch a flight, and we don't even see them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
So how did you decide, as you're coming up through, you know, this is your history and how you guys met and you got into the real estate, what was the thinking behind, I think we want to do a short-term rental and to do it in your home? What was the thinking there?
Well, the goal has always been, we want to live for free. That's the goal. I want to live for free. So how can we get there? Our first home we bought, this was before any real estate anything. I mean, other than we bought a home.
We were still working in the kitchen at that time.
Yeah, we're still working in the kitchen. So,
and if anybody on the call or listening to this later has ever worked in a kitchen, you know the kind of hours that go into working in a restaurant kitchen. It's it's very non-forgiving.
Yeah.
And almost 10 years ago, we didn't have any money. Yeah. So to buy our first house on...
When I bought the first house, I was making $12 an hour.
Yep.
I mean... And we still own that house. It's a rental for us now. And we love that house. We'll never sell that house because it's a great rental, but also it's got sentimental value. So so we lived in that house and we lived there for 5 years. And during that time, we kind of, I kind of got the bug and I dragged her along with me.
I did not.
and that was when the whole idea of we want to live for free came around. So we were, you know, we got married while we lived in that house.
He proposed in the backyard, yeah, which is part of the sentimental.
With the bum meat. Oh, so that's why it's so sentimental. I get it.
And so then we decided, okay, we want to live for free. How do we do that? Well, we did look for doubles and duplexes and multifamilies, and it didn't come to fruition. And while we were looking for our next home, Sarah actually found, I won't say this home, but she found a home that was on this lot. And, it was, I think what you did was you searched for the cheapest home in the best schools.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There was one.
Yeah, literally.
And I thought, oh, it's so cheap. We could just build a garage or a guest house or something, and that's what we'll rent out or whatever. But then we ended up tearing down the whole thing and building the house from scratch.
Right. So oh,
my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. So we love where we live. Great area. And so we bought the house. It was not a great house, but we lived in it for 2 years. We bought the house for the lot. And
I get it. And you know what? What I hear you saying is that you do what you got to do to get started. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of that. There's plenty of that in our history. So we bought the house. We lived in it for 2 years, during which I had made another investment. I actually had bought a double off of Facebook. And
it was Craigslist.
Yeah, Craigslist. That's what it was. And I fixed that up and
also terrified me.
Rented that out and we did really well with that. And so we decided and that was going to be a long-term hold.
Okay.
But we decided, hey, let's sell it. Let's tear down this house. Let's build on the lot, but let's do it so that we always have options. And so when we built this house, it's effectively three houses in one. We've got our living space, which we're in right now. And you know, it's got our bedroom and, you know, a living space and kitchen and blah, blah, blah. And then we also have a mother-in-law suite, which is effectively like a one bedroom apartment. It's got a bedroom, a bathroom, laundry, kitchen, living space. And then in the basement is where we put three more bedrooms. And, we didn't have the builders finish out the space because I'm Mr. Big Shot. I can get it done for cheaper. Well, that maybe was a mistake, but, so we put a kitchen, we roughed in a kitchen down there, roughed in a half bath. The builders, they did finish out the three bedrooms and the full bath downstairs because when we were building it, I wanted to make sure it appraised. I wanted it to be a five bedroom house, not a two bedroom house. So that was the goal. We've always got somewhere we can rent out in our home if we choose to do so. Right now we've got a three bedroom, one and a half full home in the basement. It's a walkout basement. So
it's bigger than our first house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
And, you know, the plan is it's almost done. And we're gonna put it on Airbnb and VRBO and booking.com, Expedia, all that.
And I think that's probably the long answer to your question. The short answer is we just wanted to figure out a way to like retire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John wants to retire when he's 45 and The sub goal of that is to own 100 units to rent out either as a long-term rental or short-term. And basically we're trying to do all this hard work on the front end. So in a few years, we can just have passive income and hang out at the beach all the time. I don't know.
Yep. I get it. I get it. So, so let me just share with you guys a little bit. I had beauty salons. I was in the salon industry and I was in that industry for about 25 years. And I knew that I didn't have any retirement put back. And the only way I was going to get to retire is with real estate. And I knew that. Because when you look at all of the other retirement options, there's no way to create the kind of income that will renew itself for however many years you're going to not be working. You know, I thought if I retire at age 60, let's say, you know, I need to have another 30, 40 years of cash flow. And how are you going to save up enough money in 20 years right. in an IRA or in an annuity or in, you know, one of those type investing tools to have the kind of cash flow that you're going to need, you know, 30 years from now? What's expenses going to be 30 years from now? So I knew the only way I could do it was with real estate. So I actually started and just one at a time started buying my salon buildings. And then I would, you know, once I had it paid down a little bit, because I'd get a mortgage. And once I had it paid down a little bit, I could then leverage that equity and pull enough cash out that I could put a down payment on a second salon building. And I ended up retiring with 5 salon buildings paid for. And so that's how I created my retirement. And then from there, I started buying some single families. Right. And like you, I wanted to do the short-term rental. And I told Mark, I said, I think I want to do a bed and breakfast. And he's like, what? Because we were living in the whole house from 2009 until 2017. And so I said, yeah, I want to just try one room. I'm going to throw it out there on Airbnb, see if we like it. So I put it out on Airbnb and we did. We liked it. And it worked out okay. The guests were fun. You know, we met some great guests that were coming through. And so then we decided to do a second room. And then ultimately we did the third room. So we have a total of 3 rooms in our home that we rent out. Now, once we did the first one, we then knew that if we were going to do this, I hadn't quite retired yet. I knew that starting the B&B in the house and retiring from the salon industry overlapped by about a year there. And so I knew that we had to go to the city and get all of our permits and approvals and all of that, because I did the mayor's wife's nails. And I knew she was going to say, you're doing what?
You got to keep it on the F and up.
Yeah. So we did, we went through zoning, we figured all that out. We got all of our permits and approvals and all of that. And, you know, and we've now added, you know, another short-term rental. We've now added a condo in Florida. And just this past 6 months, I've added another condo in Columbus that I'm doing a midterm rental for traveling nurses and corporate folks that need it for more than 30 days, but not a year. You know, it's somewhere in between there. And so I now have commercial, long-term, short-term, and midterm. And so I'm feeling really good about my portfolio, but it took me a good 20 years to develop all of that into that portfolio.
Well, we've been at this for, how long have we been investing in real estate? Probably 3.5 years.
Okay.
Most of our properties, well, all of our properties that we don't live in are long-term rentals. We have.
Okay. Most of mine are. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is really our first foray into doing anything, but we're excited about it. We have like, I think 7 rentals, all single families.
Actually, one of them, while we were building this house, we lived in one of the long-term rentals.
So that's why when you're talking about the sacrifice, I mean, we had just renovated the property before we moved in. And, you know, the area was a little different than, you know, we're used to living in. But really the thing was the size of the property. It was a smaller home. And we had our baby
in the house.
Not literally, no. But when we lived there, we...
And she has a lot of stuff, and that was a very small house to be bringing a third person into.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were planning on moving into this bigger space, and so not only are we collecting baby stuff, but we're also collecting furniture, and we have all of our own stuff that we already had, and so that was 17 months of fun.
But you know what? You had an end plan. You had an end goal. So I get that. And we've done the same. Yes, absolutely.
You have to sacrifice. I mean, that's all there is to it. And if you can't do that, things are going to take longer.
And I like what Sarah said about we're doing all the hard work on the front end so that we can take it kind of easy on the back end. And boy, oh boy, is that the truth. That's definitely true. To do all the work up front, and then it just pays over and over and over. I remember when right in the bottom around 08, 09, 2010, right in that time frame when everything kind of crashed, we were buying handyman specials as fast as we could buy them because we knew the prices would never be that low again.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we were at the bottom, but I suspected we were pretty darn close to being at the bottom, and I was right. Yeah. So for those that are listening, sometimes you got to follow your gut a little bit, you know, in those things. And I just really had a gut feeling it was pretty close to the bottom. But oh my gosh, I about worked Mark to death for a couple of years there because everything needed touched in some of these properties.
Yeah.
You know, it needed the wiring and the flooring and the plumbing and the roof and the windows and everything needed touched. But you know, once that's done and you get it rented and that income starts coming in to where now all you're doing is maintenance issues, you know, a leaky faucet here and a door latch there, you know, all of a sudden you're like, okay, this feels pretty darn easy now.
Yeah. It's just, we keep saying even just about this house, I was like, at least I know I do. We just got to stabilize. We just got to just get stable and things will be good.
We've been saying that for a few months. Yeah.
I know. I get it though.
Yeah. It's been like 20 now. But we're almost there. We are so close. Like,
there's always something to do.
Yes, there really is.
But you know what? Look at how far you've come.
Yeah.
Look at how far you've come. That is just amazing when you look at how far you've come from a house that you tore down and then started rebuilding. Totally. Look how far you've come. You're ready to open, you know, your B&B downstairs, Memorial weekend. So what did you have to do? And what was your thought process? And what was your research on zoning? That's always a big question to listeners that are just getting started. And they're like, we hear all these horror stories about zoning. For me, when I went to the city, there is a section, I'm in Old Town Canal, Winchester. So I'm in an old downtown part of my little city. And there is an Ohio Revised Code section that says you can have a guest house, you know, a bed and breakfast, a boarding house. It all comes under the same Ohio Revised Code. And it says that you are allowed to do that as long as you live in the home, if it's in a residential area. And so then all I had to find out is, okay, I know I'm allowed to do it. What does the city need me to do to be able to open? And they had never opened one inside the city limits. So they said, well, we don't know what we want you to do. And so I said, okay, well, you guys go figure that out and let me know. And so they did a little bit of research, and it really wasn't much. I had to have a fire inspection. I had to have, you know, all of my, you know, smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, and which is just smart anyway. And so I had to have all those in each bedroom. So I did that. And then the fire inspection came through to confirm I did all that. And then, a health department inspection, because I was going to be serving some food. And again, I don't serve a lot of food. We're a guest house. So I do just like a little continental breakfast in the morning, just pastries and fruit and some coffees and teas and that sort of thing. And I make it available to all my guests. And so they said, well, the health department says if you're under so many people, and you have under less than four bedrooms, then we don't need to approve you. We're only after if it's more than four bedrooms and if it's more than, I think, 12 people. And I said, no, mine's going to be under that. And they said, well, then you're approved to not have to comply.
Perfect.
And I said, I need a letter that says that. And they said, all right, we'll type you a letter that says you're approved to not comply.
That's good.
So then the city gave me, because we're residential, they said, well, we don't have an actual occupancy permit to give you like we do a commercial type mm-hmm. structure. So they said, we're going to give you an occupancy letter that you have to keep on file. And that's what they ended up doing. Well, once they went through all of that, our little city has its own little like visitors and conventions bureau called Destination Canal Winchester. And it's funded by a grant money from the government. And then it goes through the grant money is distributed through the city out to the organization. And that organization then collects bed tax. So I then had to pay bed tax, which all the hotels and Airbnbs and everybody has to pay bed tax. And so, so I have to pay bed tax. So I said, well, where does the bed tax go? And they said, well, we split it two ways. Number one, we divide it in half and we give half of the bed tax that we collect for the year to our little visitors and conventions bureau to help them advertise for tourism for the city. And I said, okay, well, that's a win-win because those folks then will stay with me.
Yeah.
And they said, in the other half, we give back to the lodging facilities to do something in within their facility, to upgrade their facility. And I thought, well, that's really a win-win. And they said, and we can pick and choose through the city what we want to make it designated, you know, kind of dog ear it for. And I said, okay. And they said, we would like to give you a grant out of the bed tax money for you to write the program on how to open a bed and breakfast in Canal Winchester. So if anybody else wants to do it, we'll just send them to you. I said, works for me. So I got the grant money to write the program. And so now I am kind of the go-to person in this area if anybody wants to open an Airbnb or whatever.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how many people come to you or?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Yes, I have a whole entire course online. It's at kathybenner.com. And if you scroll down to the ins and outs of a B&B, you'll find this free meetup there. And then you'll find the course there that I wrote for the city, and then you'll find a mastermind there.
Cool. Well, good for you.
That's nice that Canal Winchester is so open to what you're doing. Cause I know like in some areas, it's not such a friendly relationship.
Exactly. So what hurdles did you guys have to go through, or have you done that yet?
Well, I have done a lot of research, but I have not found anything in my research that states that we need to do anything. So, because we're kind of in a little area here where we're not in Dublin, we're not in Powell, we're in between in a little village called Shawnee Hills. And in all my reading of the bylaws, I haven't seen anything that's required. So maybe it's a little bit of a don't ask situation.
Yes. And here we are putting it on Facebook.
Yeah.
No, I get it. Because at some point, you know, if there is something you want to do, whatever it is, you know,
right.
because you don't want to go into hiding and think, oh, I know.
We wouldn't have any issue. I mean, like the home was just built. We should be up to code. There should be no issues there. I mean,
we just passed the life safety inspection to move in ourselves. And I do remember when we got the designs for the house, we had to have the village council approve them. So they are, I mean, everything's on the up and up. They're fully aware that we've got other entrances and we've got two kitchens planning for a third. So we don't have an HOA. We I think it's just, don't have parties, don't do anything that's going to make the village unhappy, and good luck.
Yeah.
Well, and that's pretty much with us, you know, the city, they even said, well, we don't know what to ask you to do. Mm-hmm. And they said, we think we're just going to make sure that you have a fire inspection and the health department inspection because you're serving food.
Right.
And it was determined that we didn't have to comply with the health department. And so every year we have our fire inspection. That's it. That's our total compliance. And it makes us feel good to know that we're getting that done and it's getting signed off every year.
Yeah.
My parents have a short-term rental in Florida, and they had a mostly similar experience, except when it came to the HOA. They had more pushback from the HOA. But even with that, they're up and running. They haven't really had significant issues.
Yeah. We have a condo in Florida as well. And our HOA there in Florida simply says that we have to rent it for a minimum of 30 days. Other than that, there's no other requirements. They didn't want the nightly stuff. They just didn't want somebody coming every night, like, you know. So they wanted more of a snowbird kind of thing.
Do you have to deal with like squatters' rights after someone stays there for 30 days?
No, because they're signing an actual lease agreement, just the way you would sign a lease agreement for an apartment. It's a legal binding lease. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nice to know. I am kind of interested in maybe like a professional student or a traveling nurse, like you said, maybe they could stay down here, but
get a hold of me if you decide to do that. I've got lease agreements as a sample you can look at.
That'd definitely be something we'd make them sign a lease.
I would think that a midterm rental would be a much different experience than the short-term rental we're preparing for.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's kind of what we thought, like, you know, we have this mother-in-law suite, which is kind of like a one-bedroom apartment. Right now we use it as our daughter's room and her like play area.
Okay.
But eventually when she gets older and we have maybe another child, they will move downstairs and that'll be their bedrooms down there. But we'll still have this space. And, you know, hopefully a mother-in-law doesn't actually have to move in because everyone's healthy. And we'll have this space that we can rent out. It'll be a different space. It's going to be like a 700-square-foot apartment. But something like a short-term or a midterm rental might be great for that, where someone just needs somewhere to live for 3 or 4 months. You know, a one bedroom apartment is all they need. It's got a kitchen, it's got everything you need. So,
you know, coincidentally, my mother-in-law is in there right this minute babysitting. So it's working so far.
Yeah. Hey, I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love the fact that you guys have all of these options. I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, this house is bigger than we need right now, but it can flex and grow and shrink as we need it. So I figured even when we're old and can't take care of a whole house, we can live in the mother-in-law suite and then we still don't have to leave. We can just downsize by moving next door.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I get that. And when we started doing our house on short-term rental and we have our owner suite in the back, the owner suite's the perfect size for us because we love to travel. And so, you know, we've got a kitchen, a living room, a dining room, and a bedroom, and a full bath. That's the whole owner suite. So we're very happy with that. And so we travel whenever we want and we don't have to worry about taking care of the whole house. Yeah. I love that. My next question is, how do you plan on getting your bookings up? You know, walk us through what you're going to do to actually start advertising and getting your bookings on your short-term rental.
Well, the goal is to find a channel manager / property management software. And that has been, I've been trying to research that and figure that out. I've been talking with folks and looking at websites and this and that. And it's been a little bit difficult because, to be honest, they all seem pretty similar.
They are.
And so how do you pick one? I don't know. Maybe, I guess we're just going to have to go with one and see if it pans out. But that is the goal, is to get everything localized on channel manager, you know, software, short-term rental software, and just kind of blast out from there onto Airbnb, VRBO, and booking.com, Expedia, etc., wherever else that specific to be determined software uses. As far as like, you know, pictures and descriptions and all that, I'm very familiar with doing with that. I am a realtor. And so, you know, none of that should be an issue. You know, while this is like our personal business, I also have a full-time business as a realtor where I'm listing homes, I'm working with buyers and sellers and everything. So that is something that I'm very familiar with and not a concern at all. In addition, I know Sarah's been working on kind of like getting together different attractions around here and stuff like that, that we can advertise.
We thought about doing just one big, here's what to do when you get here book. But besides that being kind of a big undertaking and something that we'd have to really maintain as businesses come and go or events come and go. We thought we would do something for each guest, like tailor, oh, you're a family of three. I bet you'll like these restaurants. I bet you want to go to the zoo, and like make a smaller list that's much more curated for our specific guest. And so maybe we'll see, oh, upcoming events, there's going to be a festival in August. I guess we'll just have to come back.
So, well, I love your idea. Eddie says, do you have any suggestions for the software? So we're going to back up just a minute and talk about the software.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
What have you narrowed it down to, John?
Well, I was, like I said, it's hard to narrow it down. I was looking at Lodgify, which is one of them, and also HostAway, which it's, I think I'm between HostAway. And then I asked someone recently what they used, and they said Hospitable, which used to be called SmartBnB. Mm-hmm. And they all have like their little niche, you know? And so I liked what Hospitable was saying that they do, which I think they really focus on the communication with the guest. HostAway, I think, is a little bit more expensive, but they seem to be the most broad in that you can integrate, because they all can integrate these different technologies. Right. And if you go to their website, they'll list all these different technologies, from dynamic pricing to smart locks to stuff I don't even know what it is, all up and down. And when you go on HostAway and you look at all their different integrations, not only do they have so many, but they also have a bunch that say coming soon as well. So mm-hmm. that, I mean, now for us, I don't know if we need all that, because right now we're one unit. I mean, we live here. So we're going to be on site. I don't know how much automation and, you know, I guess hand holding or whatever you call it, we are going to need, versus someone who maybe has 50 properties and, you know, it's a whole different story. So to answer the question, I don't know what we're going to do yet. We still have a little bit to decide, but
it sounds like though we could start with something really basic and maybe the less expensive option. And then as we grow and have more bookings and more properties, maybe we'll upgrade to one that a booking site that can do more. But for now, I think we just need the basics. Yeah. Unless you have a special recommendation that you use, we'll just one copy thing, you.
One thing that a lot of them do, and some of them I think push harder than others, is they create a website for your specific property, or they help you to do that, and they help you to push people to that, because then you can avoid all the fees that you spend towards Airbnb and or VRBO or whatever. And so that is intriguing to me. But it also opens up another can of worms in that we lose all the protections that those companies provide. You know, if there's an issue with the guest, instead of me maybe having a big company behind me, I have to them sign a lease that I need to create or get from somebody. And so that's a whole different can of worms. However, it is nice if you can generate, you know, the SEO and you get the website really kicking, and then all of a sudden all, you know, 70% of your bookings come from the website, and, you know, you're making significantly more money because you're not paying Airbnb to find your guests for you. So that's another aspect that is something that we're thinking about.
I agree with everything you're saying. I started by just putting one room out on Airbnb, again, just to see if we would like it. And most of the booking sites are going to charge somewhere between 15 and 18% commission of the room rate to get you the lead, to get you the guest. And Airbnb, they're trying to constantly, you know, build their platform out and make it very host friendly and make it very guest friendly. And so they do have an insurance policy, but 99.9% of the time, you wouldn't fall into those categories because,
right,
you know, the things that are going to happen are not going to be things that even are covered under their insurance program. So, which is another thing, make sure that you get some insurance. Make sure when you talk to your insurance agent that your insurance will cover guests coming and going, that they know you're using it as a short-term rental as well, just to protect yourselves. But with that said, the main reason to have a channel manager, even if you just have one unit, is because when somebody on VRBO and somebody on Airbnb and somebody on booking.com and somebody on Expedia all book that at the same time and you get a double booking, you're responsible to find the second and third person that booked a place to stay, and you're responsible to pay the difference between what they would have paid you and what you end up paying to. And we call that in the industry where you have to walk them somewhere. When you have to walk a guest, it means you have to pay the difference over what they were expecting to pay and what they actually ended up having to pay to get a place to stay. So that's your biggest advantage on having a channel manager. So I recommend that as soon as you get started, if you're going to advertise on more than one channel, to put a channel manager in place at that time. Because what happens with the channel manager, as soon as one channel books, it will go through the channel manager and push it out, and it'll block it in real time on the other channels. So you cannot double book a room if you have a channel manager.
And realistically,
I know that.
Realistically, in my research, it's really not that expensive. I mean, in the long run, like compared to what you're going to be bringing in.
No, it's just, not.
It's not. And like the ease that it creates, it's totally worth it, I'm imagining, but.
Yes. Now here's the part that I had to learn, because when they told me, oh no, we push it back out to the other channels, I had this strange feeling, see, that I could just enter on my channel manager, that I could just enter my rooms and enter my prices, and at the push of a button, it would just populate those other channels. That's not the case. So allow some time. And here's why. You have to go to each channel. You have to go to Airbnb and upload your unit there with your pictures and whatever, and fill out on their format. Then you have to go to VRBO and upload your pictures and all your information and your pricing on their format, because some booking sites want you to put the base rate in and then you add a rate for more additional people. Some booking sites want you to put your top amount in for the number, maximum number of people, and then subtract down to your base rate. And so you have to go to each channel and upload and get it set. Then you go to your channel manager and simply connect those channels to your channel manager.
Makes sense.
So the point is that if you're going to be on four different channels, and then have your channel manager so that you don't double book, you're going to end up uploading your unit five times.
Yeah.
To each channel and then to your channel,
and manager, then your channel manager.
And then make it connect. So just give yourself some time.
Right.
If you're going to do that. Now, if you just want to open on one channel and just run on one channel and you're only managing it on the actual booking site's channel, like on Airbnb, and you go right to Airbnb. If you're doing that, at that point, you wouldn't have to worry about it, because you can't, because that's the only place you're advertised.
Right.
Yeah.
So what channel manager do you use, or do you just do one?
I actually am using CloudBeds.
Okay.
I narrowed mine down to Little Hotelier and CloudBeds. Those were the two that I narrowed mine down to at the time. And then I chose CloudBeds. And again, like you said, they're all so similar.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I got to spin the wheel and pick one, because I had a couple of double bookings, and the stress of having a double booking, I said, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah.
I've got it. Cause I was dragging my feet. I didn't want to have to enter it into all those. And after I ended up with the double booking for a second time, I said, okay, that's it. I'm getting a channel manager. I'm not doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we could pick one, and if we don't like it, we can switch.
But yeah.
Yes.
Maybe it's trial and error.
Although they do try and get you, because they want you to sign up for like a year. And so it is a lot cheaper to do a year than a month. But, you know, it's worth maybe doing a month and seeing if you like it, and then sign up for the year.
Double bookings aside, though, good for you for having so many people wanting to stay in your place.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So anyway, we still have some questions, and they want to know, do you have to be there to meet each guest? We're going to talk about that in a minute. And then it says, I thought one booked a room on Airbnb and not per person. Yeah, it's both. You can book a room, you can book a unit, and then there is a per person feature, so that if you have more people, you're actually going to collect more money. And then it says, what are the range of costs for the channel manager? I pay $124 a month. It's a flat fee for cloud beds. And I have, right now I have 5 channels connected to my cloud beds channel manager.
What I'm saying,
like you said, it also comes with the website. So
yeah.
once I uploaded everything into my channel manager, that becomes my website. And if somebody books directly to my website, which is my channel manager connection, I don't pay a commission there.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I only pay a commission if it comes in from one of the online booking sites.
I'm seeing like $25 a month for like one unit, but more or less, but around that, which really in the long run isn't that bad. Yeah.
No, no. And I pay $124 a month. And if I remember correctly, when I first started, I just started with just the channel manager, because it comes in 3 parts. You get the channel manager, you get the front office desk app, and you get the website. And you can buy it all, or you can piecemeal it and buy, you know, just the front office, just the channel manager, just the website. Well, I started with just the channel manager, and don't quote me, but I think mine was like $65 a month just for the channel manager. Right. And I connected all my channels, but I was still having to manually figure out how to, you know, run the front desk. And so then I took the leap and I just said, you know what, for $124, I'm going to do the whole thing. And it came with my front office software and my website software. And now I just go into my front office software and I do everything right there. I communicate with the guest. I check them in there. I change rates there. Anything that I do, then it just pushes it backwards out to all my channels.
And that's worth it. I mean, to just one, I mean, like you said, there's different channels. To go to each one, to worry about pricing and this and that and communicating, it's, if you're going to do multiple, it seems like a no-brainer to get a channel manager.
Yeah. Now the question says, cloud beds bookings, does that cover all the agreements, et cetera? You have to, again, you have to go and sign up for each online travel site that you want to basically advertise on. So you'd have to go and sign up and register for booking.com. And then you'd have to go sign up and register for Expedia. And then you'd have to go sign up and register for Airbnb. You have to agree to those agreements individually. And then you go to the channel manager to connect the channels that you agreed to be on. So I hope that answers the question in the chat. So
I think the one thing that, and I kind of hit on this before, but is a little bit scarier, I don't know. And I'd be interested to hear how you deal with this. When they book through the website, do you have an agreement that they sign? Or is it just kind of like a wing and a prayer?
We run our guest house just the way a hotel is. When you go to a hotel, the most they're going to ask you for is maybe to make a copy of your driver's license. And you sign a little check, a registration card. And so anyway, that's all done online through the channel manager for us. And so a lot of times we don't even see the guest. They'll say, hey, we're flying in. We just need to spend the night. Then we have to be somewhere for family, you know, for breakfast the next morning. So we'll be checking out early. And then there's some guests that we never even see.
Yeah.
They check in, go to sleep, and they're gone by the time we wake up in the morning.
I think for, at least for me, and one of the biggest fears is like the guests come in and they throw a party and they trash the place. And for you, you know, you've got the individual rooms. The likelihood of that is pretty low. I mean,
right.
Who's coming in with their partner or whatever and just trashing a room. That's probably not going to happen. But, for me, to some extent, with it being like a full space, I could worry about that. And then even more so if we're not even there, you know, like our next one, we're not going to be living there. So I feel like the likelihood of that increases. So the fear of someone coming in and throwing a party and you have no, you know, written agreement, with that person, it just makes me a little nervous. Where like with a long-term rental, of course, you've got a lease, you've got a security deposit, the whole thing. So that's definitely something that if we were going to do the whole website, you know, book from there, that I would want to like lock in tight with a short-term rental, which I know people have them.
Yes.
So it'd be either finding that from someone that we trust or getting it from a lawyer.
Well, this is a list of house rules. When you book, you agree to this. So no parties.
Yeah.
No spilling.
Now, we're headed to South Florida here in June because I have a speaking engagement down there. And we decided to stay at an Airbnb in South Florida for my speaking engagement. And as soon as I accepted it through Airbnb that I wanted to go ahead and book that room, she did send me an actual lease agreement for my two nights. And it's just a short-term rental lease agreement that has all of that in the lease agreement. And I had to send it back with my payment and with a deposit.
Which is, I mean, it's good to protect yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt anything. So
yeah. So you
definitely
you can
something
do that.
I feel like worth researching.
Yeah, we're gonna talk next about pricing. It says, how do you price the room and are there any tips for pricing? What I like to do is I look at see what the area is, you know, the current market. And in the real estate industry, you know, you it's like getting comps for your real estate. I just find out what's going on with other units that are similar to mine. And then I like to be kind of in the middle and then just a hint above the middle.
Yeah.
Just a hint above the middle. That's where I like to place myself. I don't want to be the cheapest room, you know, because then I get all the, you know, all the one night stands. I don't want to be the most expensive because, you know, we don't have marble countertops and all of that. So I like to be in the middle and then just a hint above. So that's how I do my pricing. John and Sarah, how about you guys? How do you determine the price for your unit?
Well, we're still flirting with that idea, but the goal is to be kind of like you said, but perhaps maybe even a little higher. Our feelings are, you know, this is our basement and we're okay. If we're not shooting for, you know, 100% occupancy, we would like enough money to pay the mortgage. And that doesn't mean, you know, 25 nights a month. We're going to price it so that maybe if we can get 10 nights a month,
okay,
then we're paying our mortgage. So that we get to use our basement as well. You know, we want to be able to use that space.
It's finished, it's a very cute basement. So I want to be able to use it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're going to have a pool table down there. Like, I want to be able to go down there and play pool, you know, things like that. So all that being said, that's where we're going to get our base price. But I am very excited about the idea of dynamic pricing, which is effectively, you know, you hire X, Y, or Z company. There's really, I think, three main ones. And it's not overly expensive from my understanding. And, you know, they go out and they look at, you know, what's happening in this city and what is everyone else paying in all these other areas. And basically they will change the price daily based on all those factors to increase your occupancy. Now, you know, you can, from what I understand, you can change within those parameters how aggressive you want to be. And then, you know, okay, like, oh, we've got a vacancy coming up, you know, this Friday. Well, that's no good. So they'll lower the price just to get it filled if you want, that kind of thing. So I am excited about that.
Now, a lot of the booking sites will do that automatically.
Yeah. I've heard
Airbnb has, you just tick the button on Airbnb and they'll do that for you. And booking.com will do that for you.
What I've heard is that that's not really the way to go, because Airbnb just wants bookings. They're not looking out for you specifically so that you get the most out of your booking. They want a booking,
right?
So that, you know, so in my research, it's worth it to spend a little bit more to get a lot more than just clicking the button on Airbnb and, you know, kind of hoping for the best. But it's nice that it's there, but I think that I'd rather pay a little bit and get a lot of it.
And it's nice that, I mean, it's our rental. We can manually change the price if we want. If we just know that there's a convention going on down at Bridge Park, we're 2 miles from there. Mm-hmm. We will just use our own knowledge of what's going on in the area Absolutely. And change the price.
Mm-hmm. And with the channel manager, manager, you change it on your channel manager and it pushes it backwards it pushes it out to all your channels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's nice that nothing is set in stone. If we don't like our channel manager, we'll change it. If we don't like our price, we'll change it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What are the name of the companies that will do that for you? Do you know offhand?
The three that I know of are Price Labs, Beyond. I think they used to be called Beyond Pricing, but now they're just Beyond. And the third is Wheelhouse.
Okay.
I think Price Labs is the biggest one. But just like with the channel managers, they'll do the same thing, but they do it a little differently. And so one might be the way to go for someone versus another. I don't have extensive knowledge, but I know that those are the main three beyond the channel themselves.
Yeah. Good to know. Yes. Thank you. That was a great question. Now describe to me what a check-in is going to look like for you guys. Once you're up and running, you've got your channel manager in place, your bookings are coming in. How do you envision your check-in process to go?
Hopefully as smooth as possible.
And frequent.
Yeah. We want it to be as automated as possible.
Yes. Contactless.
Yes. Contactless. So this is kind of a weird nuance just for us, but one of the interesting things, like it's great to have a smart lock so that you can just give the guest a code and they can enter on their own and you don't have to worry about getting them a key and say, you know, pointing here's the bathroom or whatever. So the specific, we have French doors to enter our home in the basement there. It's like I said, it's a walkout. And they have this specific locking system that is, I don't know, its own thing.
I don't think we've done it right yet. So I don't know.
We're still working on getting the door locked. So anyways, the point of that is there's no such smart lock that exists that you can buy to install in these doors. So if we wanted to do that, we'd have to change out the whole doors, which we don't want to do. A friend of mine suggested is to get something called, bear with me here because I don't really know anything about it, but an access control, which is effectively like what you see at maybe like a dorm or like to get into a dorm building or like a commercial building where you'll have like a little fob that you put up and it's like a magnetic lock. And so it'll open the magnetic lock. So instead of actually locking the door itself, we'll have another lock that you just put the fob up to. So maybe we'll have a lockbox that holds the fob in it and you open that and then you give the fob, you swipe the fob to open the door. And then instead of being able to just punch a code to enter, which would be ideal, but not giving them a key.
Not really secure though. I mean, they could just give the code to anyone.
Well, they could, yeah.
Better.
The fob is good because you have to have it. So that's kind of the plan for entry. Beyond that, you know, we want to get as much information to the guests as possible. And that kind of plays back into not exactly the channel manager, but the whole system itself where, you know, all that information is going to come on the front end. Mm-hmm. Here's how you get to the property. Here's how you get to the front door, you know, which you got to walk through our backyard. You know, there's a whole stairway system to get there, blah, blah, blah. You know, when you walk in, What do you do when you walk in the door? Well, to the left, there's a little welcome station with coffee and the Wi-Fi password. And
that's where we'll keep our list of, we think you guys will enjoy these restaurants.
Right.
And then when they go to their rooms, we've already got little welcome baskets set up. So there's their towels and toiletries. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they'll have an easy time finding the property. We've got plenty of parking. Getting to like the actual entrance, plenty of space to set your bags down, take your shoes off, and hopefully just relax, connect to the Wi-Fi right away, go take a shower because you know where everything is. And like check-in is such a minor part of their experience. It just works and it's a short, easy process. And then they can just either go to the zoo and have fun or just go sit on that brand new comfy couch that I'm jealous of and just relax.
I get it. And oftentimes, you know, your guests, sometimes they've been traveling for some time. They've been on the road or they've gotten off of a flight or for whatever reason, traveling can be very tiresome. And so the last thing that you want is for them to struggle to get through the door because that's so frustrating for the guest. And so we actually have a keyless entry on our front door. It's the guest entrance for us. And every guest gets a welcome letter as soon as they book. And then the day of their check-in, they get an electronic check-in letter that says you've been electronically checked in. And this is the entrance code. This is your room assignment. You know, we've left you some cookies and there's coffee. And it's kind of the same thing you guys are talking about. And all of that is in a template in my channel manager. And so once a guest checks in, all I got to do is click a button and those notifications automatically go out when I'm ready for them to go out.
Right.
I remember we go on vacation to the Outer Banks a lot. Uh-huh. And when we worked at the restaurant, we worked evenings. And so we would work our shift, get off at 10, go home and shower, and then get in the car at like midnight to drive about 12 hours. And then of course the house didn't open up until like 4 the next afternoon. So I remember one year we got there and it was like a keypad. You put in the code and then the star sign. And we clearly were not thinking straight and we could not figure out how to get in this door because we didn't press the star sign because we'd been up for like 30 hours. And it was so frustrating to be tired and hot and sweaty and unshowered and like a mashed potato brain. And then to not even be able to open the door. I just wanted to get in, take a shower and start our vacation. And the door was the one last thing in the way. It was so frustrating.
Yep,
so
I get it.
We'll never give that experience to somebody else.
Yeah. So you definitely, So I'm always very conscientious to make sure that my guests get through the door. Okay. That they get the code punched in because again, they're tired. They've been traveling. I get it because we travel too. And we know what it's like to get in the middle of the night. And go, I just want to go to bed. The question is, can you time the messages to go out automatically? And yes, in the channel manager, there are triggers in the channel manager that you can trigger a particular message to go out. Like if somebody books, you can trigger the welcome letter to automatically go out. When you check someone in and click that they're now in house, it triggers that check-in letter to go out that they're now checked in and this is their code to get in the front door and their room assignment. So yes, those things can happen automatically. So let's talk about what kind of food are you planning on putting in the unit? Are you going to do any type of, you know, with the kitchen, are you going to do coffee? Are you going to do any kind of a little breakfast? What is your plan on food?
Right now, even though we worked in kitchens, neither one of us want to cook any more than we have to. And we definitely cannot bake. So right now we just have little packaged foods. We didn't want to do anything in bulk because I don't know, maybe we're just germaphobes, but as a guest, I wouldn't want to eat something that somebody else might've touched. Right. So individual like Keurig cups for coffee. We do have bulk coffee if somebody wants to, you know, be brave. And just individual package snacks like Nutri-Grain bars and and water.
Bottles of water.
Yeah. I don't think we've actually talked about this, but I have decided that we have so many nice small businesses in Shawnee Hills. We've got like an ice cream place, maybe 100 yards away, there's a bakery, like across the street from it, there's a great breakfast place, maybe a quarter mile away. So if we did want to provide like welcome snacks or a goodbye breakfast or something, we would just showcase the local food and support the businesses in Shawnee Hills because we love them too. And we want them to stick around. And also just out of pure laziness, I don't want to bake cookies for myself. I don't want to cook for somebody else either.
I get it.
And then, you know, just, I just want to give food to people that we know is safe and fully cooked and we're not liable for it if for some reason they get sick. And it just seems cleaner to have a professional kitchen prepare food for the guests.
So I get that. And I do the same thing. I've got prepackaged muffins and cookies and all kinds of things that I put out. And I have a baker's rack in my parlor, which is the entrance parlor for all the guests. And I have cookies when they check in at night. And then in the morning, I have individual pastries and cookies and a big fresh fruit bowl. And then flavored coffees and teas and all of that. It's all there ready for the guest when they come down in the morning. So
that's nice.
Yeah. So, and I don't advertise that per se. And so when they come down, they're like, wow, this is for us. So they feel like, you know, they're getting this extra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's smart. I like that. Don't advertise it.
Yeah.
Then it's a bonus instead
of just, we say that we're a guest house. That way they're not expecting any food, but when they come in and they see these complimentary cookies, they're like, oh, wow. That they go, because how many times if you're traveling that you get in late at night and you just want a little something before you go to bed and you don't want to go back out again. And we're not in a position where we have vending machines. And so my baker's rack in my parlor, in our entrance parlor is where I put those snacks for when guests check in, and then there again in the morning when they come down to leave or to go out for the day or whatever. So I do. And I've got all the coffee pots on timers. And so I don't have to, I don't even, I don't have to be there. It just kind of does it all by itself. All right. How about linens and supplies? Let's talk about that. We're winding down. How about linens and supplies? Do you have a place where you like to purchase? Have you decided where that stuff's going to come from for the guests?
Well, there's this little kind of boutique online website that we know. It's called Amazon.com. And that's really it. I mean, Sarah's really been handling most of that is Amazon, baby. And it's nice because anything you buy, it's just so easy to buy it again.
Yeah. Yes. We're making like an Amazon wish list, basically. Anything that we buy for this Airbnb, we're just adding it to the list. And then as we open up new ones, we don't have to think anymore. We just go down the list and go buy, 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 buy. And if we have to, say one Airbnb is short on shampoo, it's not like we need to go buy a whole pack. We can just mix them from of our different Airbnbs. Yeah. So
you can have an inventory. You can start building an inventory. Yes.
I think most of what we bought was from Amazon just because it's easy. Mm-hmm. And all the linens are white, so they're easy to clean. Mm-hmm. And you know, they look like fresh, clean hotel linens and they all match. So it's really easy to, like, if one of the pillowcases gets stained, we don't have to buy a whole set of another sheet or another set of like four pillowcases. We can just sub in one of our backups. And we have a big storage area in the other half of our basement that isn't finished. And so just like you, we have two baker's racks and all of our backup supplies is in there or are in there. So we've got lots and lots of storage, like a whole doomsday prepper setup back there that we can just fill in all of our other rentals with.
And I have that as well.
One decision that we made that I don't see a lot of other short-term rentals doing, but we made this decision for us, is that every room, we have three bedrooms, they all have a king size bed. And we did that because then we don't have to worry about, oh, is this a king or a queen? Is this, you know, like, so
yeah, switching out the linens is easy.
Exactly. It's just all king. And so, I mean, who doesn't love a king size bed? And even, you know, if you're staying with, you've got two kids, well, they're going to love it too. You know, it's a big old bed. And so we felt like it would just make life easier on us, but no one's going to be upset that, oh, I have to sleep in a king.
We did. We got lucky and our daycare was getting rid of some of their cribs just to replace them with like wood ones. They got rid of plastic ones for wood ones. So they were perfectly fine, perfectly safe plastic cribs that fold up. So they're easy to store. And so each one of our bedrooms has space for a crib if somebody's traveling with the baby.
Yeah, so we have three extra cribs.
And they all are the same size, so we can get crib sheets for them and switch them out just like the big beds.
Good idea. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in such a family-friendly location, so we figured our Airbnb needs to be family-friendly too.
No, and especially with having three rooms, you can see where families would book it. Yeah. Whereas I get a lot of couples because it's I'm renting by the room. So I get a lot more of just couples.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Probably the biggest draw that we have aside from the Memorial Tournament, which happens 1 week a year, is the Columbus Zoo, which is one of the best zoos in the country. And you can walk there from our home. We anticipate a lot of families. I mean, kids and maybe two families, that want to save a little money, but they also, I mean, there's no hotel around here. It's not like there's a zoo hotel that people are staying at. So we're probably going to be the closest stay to the zoo that you can get. So that being said, we do anticipate a lot of families with young children.
And the other nice thing about marketing towards families is if we're worried about parties, I doubt like a couple of kindergartners are going to really be throwing a major. We know that kids can be destructive, but not as destructive as a bunch of crazy 20 somethings having a party. So we like being a family friendly.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And that's going to end up being your niche and you'll end up getting repeat business. Folks will come back year after year.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of repeat now. I've been in it long enough that I'm getting a lot of repeat.
And that's really the goal, I think.
Yeah. Last question. Are you going to do all of your own cleaning? Do you think, or are you going to hire someone? Do you know yet?
Well, we were just talking about this today. I'll let you.
For now, as long as it's manageable, we'll just take care of the cleaning because we're not expecting to be, to have a ton of bookings each month. That's part of the way we're pricing the Airbnb. We're not expecting a ton of people each month. So if we end up having to clean it two or three times a month, that's pretty manageable. It'll probably take 6-7 hours a month if we have three bookings. But as we get more and more and get other rentals that we do want to be at capacity for, that's just not a good use of our time. So we have a few cleaning companies. We use one for our personal part of the house.
Okay.
And they said they have really flexible schedules. So if you need them to do cleanings that aren't on that every 2 week schedule, like a normal house cleaner, they can come for some ad hoc cleaning or even short notice cleaning. Like we get a last minute booking and they're here for 2 days and we need it cleaned and it's Sunday and we need it done Wednesday. They can do that. So they're pretty flexible. I think that's a much better use of our time to pay someone else to clean so that we can focus on getting more rentals.
We plan on cleaning it, but we are not going to tie ourselves down to that by any stretch. And we feel it's important that we always have someone that can do it if we need or want that.
Our whole goal is to do as little work as possible. So we will do it as long as it's easy. But then once it doesn't make sense anymore, we're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it. And I'm still doing mine because, again, I'm right here and it's so easy to just, I don't always have all three rooms. Sometimes I just have one room to do. So it doesn't take long at all to make a couple of beds and run the sweeper and wipe down the bathroom. And half an hour later, I'm done. And so I haven't hired somebody on a regular basis, except I do have a gal that comes in once a month. And she deep cleans the whole house once a month. She does boards and ceiling fans and, all those things that you don't do every single time you clean. And she does a deep
cleaning. Real maintenance.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, and one other point about the linens is we bought more than we need. We have like 6 or 7 pairs and we only have 3 beds. So when it does come to turning the unit, we don't have to wait for the washer to run. We just take the sheets off, put new sheets on, mm-hmm. and we'll wash and fold the used sheets later.
One thing about this house that is really helpful for all that is that we have 3 washer and dryers.
Because that is wonderful. Spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we had to wash a lot of sheets all at once, we could get it done, but it's nice having extra linen so we don't have that pressure on ourselves. Mm-hmm. The whole point of this is to take stress away.
Yeah. The recommendation, and again, depending, sometimes it's a rental where you don't have washer and dryer at all in the rental and everything has to be, you know, taken out to have it cleaned.
Yeah.
The recommendation is to have 3 sets. One set dirty, 1 set on the bed, and 1 set in reserve.
Well, then we're short. We have to do more Amazon shopping.
But the fact that you can do it right there in house, I think you're right. Good.
Oh yeah.
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 That's true.
It's definitely like a concern, you know, and especially when I feel like things might change when it's not in house. Yeah. And I've heard of people that use like a linen company to just handle all that.
Right.
And it's like, just kind of set it and forget it. I mean, there's a cost involved with that, but I could definitely see a circumstance in which that's worth it.
Yes. Especially in your busy seasons. If you end mm-hmm. up realizing that you're going to be seasonal, like, you know, when folks are going to the soup, you might have a high season there.
Mm-hmm.
And John's full-time job is real estate. This is part of his job, but I still have my own full-time job that's not related to real estate or short-term rentals at all. So to dedicate a bunch of time, that's my free time that I'm giving to the Airbnb. And I don't necessarily want to spend my free time making somebody else's bed.
I get it. Nope. I get it. I think you guys have a great plan. I can't wait to see it. Again, I get to go to the Memorial Tournament on June mm-hmm. 1st. So I might connect and see if you have a booking not. And if not, maybe sneak over and take a peek. So I'll see how that goes, but I love it. Thank you so much for being on this evening. This has been a lot of fun. I hope our listeners have learned a lot. And again, once we're finished tonight, I will send you links to the recordings and feel free to use them however it works for you. If you can even use snippets of it or in part or in full, whatever works for you. We want you to be able to use it to help market what you're doing. So
good.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Sarah. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. We learned a lot from you. So thanks for your recommendations.
Yes, thank you so much. And we appreciate it.
Now, if anybody wants to stay or book, how can they find you? Tell us that.
Pardon me. Well, for now, I mean, the long-term answer will be, you know, you go on Airbnb.com or VRBO or whatever it is. But you know, if you're really excited about it and you want to, you know, figure something out before then, I'll just give you my phone number. You give me a call. I'm used to giving out my phone number anyways, because I'm a realtor, so it's no secret. But my phone number is 614-843-5656. Or you can email me, and my email is John, J-O-N, at thestyergroup.com, which is thestyergroup.com. So right. I guess we're the Steyer Group.
And, again, I want to repeat your phone number. It's 614-843-5656.
5656, yeah.
All right.
And I do, like, I also work with, you know, buyers and sellers. I work with a lot of investors. I've worked with tons of investors who have bought Airbnbs here in Columbus. But or properties that they're going to turn into Airbnbs, but this is our first one.
All right. So if anybody needs any help with real estate, give John a call.
Right.
If you're in the Central Ohio area and you're wanting to do an Airbnb and you're looking for an Airbnb, give John a call. If you want to stay close to the Columbus Zoo or the Memorial Tournament that's coming up here in a week, give John a call. He's going to have his unit ready. So good news.
Well, thanks so much, Kathy. And, you know, we look forward to you coming out and seeing it here soon.
Yes. And anyone that wants to listen to any of our replays, you can find those at kathybinner.com. Simply scroll down to the ins and outs of opening a B&B and click through, and all of our replays are actually saved right there. So you can listen to all the replays. We talk to somebody new every month. And again, this month was John and Sarah Steyer. So thank you so much. And we will see you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.